You're listening to Drake in the Morning
with Danny, Wes, and Sid
on 98.1 The Max.
So it really isn't morning drinking if you've been up all night slamming them.
That's right.
Well, that philosophy is one I think that most people should adopt and just live by and just keep it that way. You've been out off some, so have we. We're back and forth. Everybody's getting ready for school again and all this stuff.
Luckily, no news is happening.
No, nothing's going on whatsoever that I've seen. It's hard to check out when you're in this business. I tried in New Orleans, but I also learned in New Orleans that you leave this city in the rear view and you think that you're going to get away from the news and the insanity of life. Then you go to this place, which is a unique city in America, and see that things are even worse there.
Yeah.
And it makes you analyze or realign your thinking about crime, about city infrastructure. They have some of the worst roads I've ever seen in my life in a city of that size. They, in fact, I mentioned on the air, they had a really, really horrible show in the evening. They would do their news on, I guess, the ABC affiliate 10 to 10:30. Some really, really bad anchors, awful people. I'm sorry, but they sucked. Then it would take a half hour before Kimmel and do a local entertainment, what they thought was really cute and
like a sort of a
little uptown New Orleans. Yeah. With entertainment news, with two middle-aged people who were too old to be hip, were never hip, and were trying to be funny and cute. And they had a segment on the show called The Pothole of the Week.
Ooh.
And I thought we should have that in this town. Somebody is missing out big time.
I swear to God,
they had a pothole of the week, and they had some lady on camera, and they're at her house, and she was bitching and moaning, and the city had it all jacked up, and she was pissed. And that was a weekly feature. We at least haven't stooped to that. But as I say it here, I'm afraid I'm putting ideas in somebody's head.
Well, you're definitely putting ideas in my head, but mostly that could be my new band name. Pothole of the Week.
Well, there are many ways to go with that, but
yeah, that's.
But you just strong. Do. I mean, you just do learn the lack of optimism in many places. We had a list yesterday that I dropped on our friend Kyle Veazey from the mayor's office of the V's, as we all know him,
Sleazy Veazey.
That Memphis, they had the top run cities in this country, and the number one best run city was some town in Idaho. Number 10 was Louisville. Number 141 was Memphis. And we debated that issue as being a little bit much, probably outdated and probably done without too much in-depth looking at what the deal is. And in summary, things here seem to be settling down. The budget's done. The MPD has a new class coming. Nobody seems to be cutting up too much. The only these people met yesterday. We have learned that three of them now are confirmed listeners to this program. When the V's or when you were on,
three of the city council members.
Yes, and that's almost a third. Oh. And I think that is way short, and I need your help on that because it's weak. Because they would learn how to do their job if they would just turn the show on. But they only turn on with Veazey and with you. And so
they're missing out on the real good stuff.
Yes.
They're getting the B team. Nothing but the B team.
Exactly. So apparently Worth Morgan copped to the fact that he does have the show on all the time.
Shout out, Worth.
Nice going, bro. So thank you. So yesterday they met. This is post-budget being done. And they are getting smart. They learned how to not use the word tax and use the word fee.
Oh, the sewer fee.
Major improvement. A lot of money involved here.
Well, a lot of it is unavoidable. I mean,
Well, of course it is.
With the EPA consent decree.
You don't want your front yard covered in feces and urine.
It's undesirable unless you're really, really into that kind of thing, in which case you're going to run up against some zoning problems and your neighbor's not going to like you. So, get help for that problem.
Right. This is a billion-dollar project, of which they approved about half of. This is not going to be anything that will break the bank. The fee increases, which I guess the public wasn't asked about, which is smart. Just do it.
Well, I mean, there's not a lot of choice here. You know, on some of the sanitation fee and then the sewer fee, on one of them you had a government agency saying, you have to spend this money and fix this up. It's part of a consent decree. So you have no choice.
Okay.
On the other one, it's just aging infrastructure that eventually, because you don't want the feces and the urine in the yard, you're going to have to replace. So, you know, this is something that is somewhat immune to political ideology. Now, what we're happier about is the way they did it, because when you read the article and you talk about how much it means for a residential homeowner, it's about $10 a month, $120.
That's right.
But when you're a corporate user, it can be $1 million. And so sometimes you do have to talk about it and have a good process. And we think the process they put in place yesterday, where it doesn't start to January, so people can budget for this if they're on a calendar year budget, as opposed to the city budget, which goes from July to June.
You mean businesses have to budget for it?
Yes. Have to budget. Have to put that money in their
budget.
That's
a bigger deal than somebody's house where it's 10 bucks a month.
Well, it's just, okay, we know it has to go up, but we want to put this in, rather than being hit like with half a year, all of a sudden you have another increase and that can be $500,000 hitting your bottom line. That's not a real rational way to run government. So we're happy that they stair-stepped it and decided to, time it with give them warning so they can put it in their next year plans and budgets. That's just a more reactive government. And we're happy that the process played out that way, where everybody understood the need and the need for the fees to go up, but let's do this in a, reasonable manner.
The question is, though, what becomes of the other half of the money that they need? They're still short $500 million. The fees will pay for the estimated half of that in sewer fund projects, stormwater fund projects over the next 10 years. But they're still pretty short of the $1 billion. So I guess over the next 10 years, federal funding will still be
other
coming
revenues,
in.
Other revenue streams.
Let me ask you this, just to be contentious, because the city council always has one in the punch bowl that likes to just be a problem, and it jumps out at you as being simply that. The vote was... was it 10 to 1 to raise the stormwater fees, which there really wasn't any debate about that, as you say, no ideology. Yet Ms. Swearingen, who seems to be the new fun one on the council, voted against it. What are you trying to prove?
Yeah,
if you're her. I mean, that's kind of rhetorical, but I mean, it just seems like the same old, trying to say, I didn't vote for this. To the people that are in your district, so you can run again. She's already running for office and wasting a vote that could have been shown a unity on the council to getting the right thing done.
Right.
And not being an anarchist. Shut up.
And I understand what she was saying for her constituency, that they are, some of them are on fixed incomes. It going up, that $10 a month to them is like the $500,000 to the business. And, but there also needed to be some acceptance that we didn't think the rates should go up at this time. Well, they're not going up. They're going up in January. Part of leadership is giving the people bad news sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we get further and further away from that as our politics becomes a little more susceptible to flim-flammery. And the bad news is we had an unfavorable result with the EPA, with some water quality and in the Mississippi River, and we got to fix it. And the fix cost $150 million.
Well, I just have a hard time believing, and call me a cynic, that people cannot come up with 10 bucks a month. If they needed some smokes and a quart of beer, they probably could. So I find that to be an untenable argument that is just silly. This is a change. It has to come. It's not debatable. But the question does remain, though, so as time goes by, will the other half a billion be coming in from funding from elsewhere?
Yes. There's a couple of opportunities, grants, things like that, to get that money. And it's also important to point out, you know, we talked about how we always get compared to other cities, and we're real quick to compare our property tax rate, as we should, and we have some work to do in that area. But when you look at our fees like this, we are much lower than the peer communities that even with these increases, we are still well below the national
double taxation, average. Not really withstanding, but yeah. Nonetheless, it's still a thing. I'm going to do a break here and not get late because we have so many things going on, but I'm going to do this break. We'll come back and talk to Shay some more about the sanitation strike situation.
Oh, yes.
And we can discuss if we have the stomach for it, can look at what's happening with the Senate that is in this country. And how little they're doing, and things like that. So we'll do a break and come right back.
Email us anytime at mail@drakeinthemorning.com.
We're discussing various things with Shay, City Government News. The sanitation workers and the strikes of 68 and the issues that were that surrounded that very intense, unforgettable time in this town. It's a pretty nice touch, I believe, what is being done for these men. Explain exactly what these grants mean after 50 years for these men and for this entire process.
It means they can retire. I mean, that's basically, you know, when they came out of
as opposed to what before?
What before, the sanitation workers were the only unit of city government that, because of a choice they made at post the strike, to receive Social Security in lieu of pension. So right. They have never been part of the city pension program.
They opted for the other.
The Social Security. And, you know, when you go back with Social Security and the way their wages were unfairly suppressed back then, they weren't getting enough Social Security to live on. And, you had a really unfortunate set of circumstances, not any, you know, by a variety of factors that prevented these. So you had men who had, you know, worked hard and, you know, in some really oppressive conditions back in the day that were still having to ride the trucks in their 80s. And it just wasn't something that was right. The council several years ago tried to do this with a buyout that actually would have netted them more money, but it would have required some privatization of routes and had some other things with it. So I think the Strickland administration deserves credit for taking another bite at this apple and finding a way to provide some recompense to these gentlemen who, you know, marched and helped improve our city by taking a very, very difficult stand at that time.
Well, there was a name, I think, that Kyle brought up yesterday, of this gentleman that still is on the job.
Yeah.
At 82 years old.
Yes.
Because he has to be, not because he wants to be.
Right.
Right?
Right. And allowing him to, get some money that will allow him to retire and find a way to get them some degree of a pension, I think is the right thing to do. And I'm glad they were able to do it. I'm glad they were able to do it in a way that didn't break the bank through, you know, private grants and other things. So my hat's off to all of them involved. I know, you know, we can split hairs here, and I've seen the commentary that, well, it should be more money. It should do this. It should.
I don't know why anybody anymore in your spot looks at comments about anything involving government and their ongoing decisions. I just don't know why you pain yourself to read this crap.
Well, because
it's a no-win situation.
And that's what this is. No win. You know, the popular saying in political circles is Santa Claus would never lose an election. And it's true, but Santa Claus has magic, We don't have magic. You can only do what you can do. And, you know, so again, hats off. Is it enough? We could debate that till the cows come home. Is it better than nothing? I think everyone agrees. It's better than nothing. And it's high time that someone did it. And I'm glad they were able
and
to
let's,
do that.
And let's not avoid it's obviously a good move, as you just said. But let's not be lost or let the fact be lost. It's also a very smart move to for politics locally and for the gesture that it is. And it's long overdue, but it does speak volumes 50 years later,
right,
about this town and some of the tones that we carry on. Maybe it helps to soothe some of the hurt feelings and the hurt souls, or maybe it doesn't. But nonetheless, it was a smart thing to do.
Well, you know, on that tip, we're going to have a real unique and weird year coming up as a community when we come upon the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Dr. King and all that that's meant to the country, all that's meant to the civil rights movement, and all that's meant to Memphis. And, you know, it's not all going to be good, but it's not all going to be bad. And, you know, we're going to have to face these issues in a way that few communities aren't or never have to. And so it's an opportunity for us to accept, you know, our failings, accept.
What are you being in specific as you say? I'm
well, you know, you get
looking to, at you, details here,
you know, the April 4th will be the 50th anniversary. There's going to be a lot of eyes on us as a community. And there's going to be a lot of community conversations.
Eyes on us asking questions about what's changed.
Yeah, yeah, you'd have to look at that. And there are some areas where we've made tremendous progress. There's some areas where we haven't made as much progress as we should. And we should, you know, take this time to accept and acknowledge both, but not turn it into a
dwelling upon of either.
Yes, yeah, we've got to accept the good and the bad and work to make the good better and to eliminate the bad.
Yeah, you know, there are people that still complain about how we talk about this too much every year. I mean, that's just a fact. That may hurt some feelings, but it's the truth. And this is, you know, a big topic in schools and all of that. It's going to always be. So there's no point in it's not going to go away. It's a historical event that came at a very crucial time in this country. And there are times I wonder if it changed anything. In times that I think that it probably did, but it is still odd that 50 years on, we're still having these discussions about did it or did it not, and that all eyes will turn here 50 years later to see that happen. You know, when you compare it to, let's say, you know, John Kennedy having his brains blown out 50 some odd years ago, that did not get the same kind of attention. He got some TV specials, but that was a whole different thing, but this is one that resonates still and always will.
And it's still part of who we are as a community.
Yeah,
it is. And so I think...
Less so in Dallas.
I think the 50th anniversary is a time to make a choice about how we can use this part of who we are, which is undeniably a tragedy, to make us better, as opposed to, you know, us being the racist southern town that killed the civil rights mm-hmm. icon. You know, we mm-hmm. need to take the lessons that Dr. King, and you know, this wasn't the I have a dream Dr. King, this was a poor people's march, this was a making, you know, dealing with income inequality, which is still a issue in not just our community but in communities across the country. You know, this is an opportunity to get better. And that's how we need to approach it. And I hope that that's what we do as a community.
Our guest is Shea Flynn. The past couple of weeks, past couple of months, I guess, I sit here every day and we find stories locally. We find stories nationally. You know, Sid finds things that we find job fairs. We find symposiums. And when summertime comes, we find who's doing what for kids and what kind of things are being offered. In the past couple of weeks, in the past month, for the first time in my almost 30 years in this town, you really see impressive things being put together for kids. This one that I've covered today twice about his kids learning about finance. They're like 15 years old.
Gotta have it.
And they're going to this boot camp for 3 weeks. I'm thinking, yes, finally somebody gets it. There are two or three or four other camps to learn some detailed things about just the basics of life and about hard work and about all these things that these kids without mentors, without parents, are finally getting someone to say, look, let me just, you know, just kind of show you here how this works. Because you're 15 now, and in a minute, you're going to be 30.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to need to know how to navigate your way through this life. It's not easy for any of us at any age. But these kids that are being turned loose at 18 on the streets that don't know anything is a grand part of the problem. And but it is encouraging. I don't know if it's government-driven, if it is privatized, if it is people that just, you know, get up to, you know, help. But there are more good things happening to talk about, and the day is not filled with the horrible news of some guy shooting his chick in the face point blank as she holds their 1-year-old baby. We got to get to a place where the good stories outweigh the bad. But until and unless the media, and this came up twice this week, or last week with VZ and somebody else. It was last Friday with the mayor, Mark Luttrell, just discussing that there's no source for getting out the good news anymore.
No.
It sure ain't on TV, and I feel sorry for them, because this is morons behind the scenes making those calls, not the on-camera people. The newspaper has become irrelevant, unfortunately, as far as breaking news in most cases. So we try on a show like this to expose these things. But my point is, in this rambling, that people maybe don't know that all these good things are going on. And they hang on to this dark cloud that hangs over this city, and in some cases for good reason. But there are good things happening too, and we got to embrace that and spread the word. I don't know how.
It's like a diet. What you put in, you know, garbage in, garbage out. And, you know, if all you put in, and I'm not saying we should, you know, put yourself in a bubble and live in a Pollyanna world where it's all good news. But you need to have a balanced diet of information.
You got to.
To understand it. And if all you're reading, because when I was on vacation last week, I didn't completely unplug, but, you know, when I'd go to the pool or whatever, I would not take my phone. I'd sit there and read a book. I would not be on internet or any of the social media sites and just, you know, just forget about it and put other stuff in your head, because all of it devolves down, whether it's the TV news or nextdoor.com, which is eventually taken over by the professional complaining class. And they can burn down anything. And those voices are that has become the language of online interaction. And we're all guilty of it, but you just got to balance it out. It's okay to eat dessert, but you got to, you know, moderation in all things. So moderation in the good news and the bad news.
I do not go to any social media sites. Never, not now, not ever will. I can't imagine adding that angst onto the angst you already get by going around the dial every night for 15, just say for like 1/2 hour. You go from MSNBC to Fox to CNN, and that makes me want to pull my hair out of my head.
Oh.
I can't imagine going on to a site that leans in one direction or the other and listening to that nonsense. It's poison.
It's
a cancer in this country. And I wish there were more smart people who would get off of this stuff, because it's not making you smarter. It's making you dumber. And it's frightening to me. And that's a gigantic problem at the foundation of all this anger and hate. And it's unfortunate. We're getting out of time here, but one last thing that I thought was that speaks if one thing is a commentary on American politics right now, in the 6 months that Mr. Trump has been president, we've dealt with two things. This Russia thing that gets deeper all the time and is not going away anytime soon, but it's too complicated to even attempt to discuss in a forum like this. What is, though, is the health care bill, which has spiraled so far out of control, and the uncertainties involved in it are a big problem in Tennessee and in other states around us. We got some problems. The part that strikes me the most, though, is that Mitch McConnell and his party, the GOP, the right, some of which are smart. They're like the old line of that party. But it's so fragmented, and the infighting in that party is a great deal of the problem. And as he runs down the options they have to figure this out, he actually said out loud this week earlier that their last gasp hope, if they have to, they'll work with the Democrats to figure it out.
Shouldn't that be option one?
And I thought,
on either side,
this has really come to this, that you people have lost sight so badly of how this entire democracy and that concept began, that you are going to begrudgingly, as a last gasp, work with the other party? What the hell's wrong with you people?
It's tribalism.
And this is what has happened. Maybe the silver, you know, perhaps this is going to blow this two-party thing up. Because if that man says this out loud, it's like, God, it's worse than I even thought.
As a threat.
Yeah. This is our last chance. And if you effers don't play along, I guess we'll have to work with you.
Yeah. That's crazy. And what's going on with the healthcare is crazy. And it's something that's desperately needed. It needs to be worked out, and intelligent minds can disagree on what the solution sets are. But what I think has been noticeable, you know, we've had seven, eight years of, you know, we're going to repeal Obamacare. We're going to repeal Obamacare. Okay.
They tried, 72 times?
They voted on it in the House, and then they never had a plan. And then when they were crafting this plan, they left out the industry experts. Because it's check the box politics. They just want to be able to go back and say, we told you we were going to repeal Obamacare, and we repealed Obamacare. Well, I don't think people were as upset about repealing Obamacare as they are about fixing the healthcare system. Mm-hmm. That's the issue at hand. Exactly. Now, whatever title you want to put on it. And again, that's a very complicated, very hard subject.
It's way over our heads.
There's a lot of pieces to it, but get the experts in there. When did expertise become such a dirty word?
Healthcare experts and doctors and insurance people, why aren't they involved in these meetings? And why is it left to some politician to decide the future of healthcare in your town, in your state, in your family? It's so back-asswards that it is frightening that it is allowed to get to this level. And then when you do watch the news and do go in search of answers, you see that people like Paul Ryan have run for his, he isn't saying a word about this. Trump hasn't been engaged. He doesn't want to comment on it. No one knows what the hell it says. And it's down to McConnell this is his legacy about to go down the drain. And so he is desperately running from office to office, to lunch, trying to talk anybody into getting him 50 votes.
And I think that is going to be the enduring historical record when we start looking at 2016. And I don't think it's going to be an indictment so much upon Republicans or Democrats individually, or President Trump or Secretary Clinton, but I think it's going to be a indictment on us as a people, that if you look at what's going on now, it's about Republicans beating Democrats or Democrats beating Republicans. It's not about the American people at all anymore. And that is fundamentally broken. And we all need, you know, I'd say get angry about it, but I think too much anger is part of the problem. We all need to take a step back and say, people can disagree and it doesn't make them evil. It does. It doesn't make them bad people. You know, we need to sit there and say, all right, men and women of goodwill on either side of the aisle are trying to make things better, and they've got to stop acting like they were two warring tribes that are fighting for the supremacy of our soul. That's just not what either of them are.
But it's it's become uncivilized at that level, and that's a fact. And it's the one parting note, which I think is important for everybody to get, and they don't. Most people don't understand what's happening in politics. It's too over their head. They just don't care until it begins to affect them personally. This is one issue that's affecting a lot of people in their personal lives. Therefore, it's the groundswell of resentment, hate, and confusion is getting worse. And that's why that somebody better do something here before it gets worse. Thank you. We can reconvene on this next week and see how this went. But right now it ain't going so well.
No.
Happy you're back. Good to see you as always. And happy you enjoyed your vacation, except you vomited profusely.
Profusely. Good. A little food poisoning. What'd you eat? The drink. It was something that, and I can't really even picture it without starting to gag again, but it was airplane food, shockingly. Mm-hmm. And it was some breakfast egg thing that was not cooked all the way through.
Okay. Sounds good. Well, have a good weekend. Don't eat any egg stuff or puke.
I haven't had eggs since.
And best to your wife, and have her keep an eye on you, because somebody needs to. Our friend Shay Flynn, back in a moment.
Email us anytime at mail@drakeinthemorning.com.